Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Women Who Travel is a transported podcast for anyone curious about the world. We talk to adventurers and athletes.
I've raced the God Zone Adventure Race, which is on the South Island and goes through the mountains down in the Southern Alps on New Zealand. That was 8 days spent out in the wilderness.
And chefs.
Iranian food is home, it's family, it's love.
And we share dispatches from our listeners.
Ireland is full of these, I will call them ghosts of the past.
From stampeding elephants to training sled dogs. We hear it all.
The dogs will curl right up with you, and it can be kind of cozy waiting things out.
New episodes of Women Who Travel publish every Thursday. Join us wherever you listen.
Do you enjoy science, spooky stories, and all things paranormal? We do too.
While we would love for most paranormal stories to be true, we are here to tell you that they probably aren't. But that doesn't make them any less fun to speculate about.
We are the Spooky Science Sisters podcast. In this podcast, we bring you bi-weekly discussions on possible scientific explanations behind the supernatural. Backed up by research articles and other credible sources, we do deep dives into things like archaeology and physics and share in-depth discussions with topic experts.
Visit us at SpookyScienceSisters.com to listen to a couple of skeptics debunk some of your favorite alien encounters, cryptid sightings, and ghost stories with science, sass, and a significant amount of laughter.
Thank you, and stay spooky.
The other interesting thing is, besides giving them these great directions, he says, you know, I'm from Ohio. Also, it's great to meet other people from Ohio. I actually have a boat. If you ladies would like to come out on a boat cruise.
Oh, no.
You're invited tomorrow night at sunset. Meet me at this location, and we can go out on my boat, and you can see the Tampa Bay and the sunset.
Right.
Which sounds great. And this guy is being super helpful and nice.
Pack your body bags. We're back with another episode of Slaycation, your home for vacation murders and mysterious deaths. And we're just going to jump right into this because this is part two of the boat trip, the world's worst sunset cruise.
And so where we are and here in part two is Joan and her Joan Rogers and her daughters, Michelle and Christy, had gone to Florida in 1989.
Yes. And let me just add that if you're just tuning in and you're hearing, you need to go back.
Yeah.
To the last episode and fill in.
Yeah, listen to part one because there's a lot. But summarizing for those of you who've listened to part one, these three women were in Florida getting away from a really traumatic time that they were having back on their family farm in Ohio. Dad's back home in Ohio. The women are
manning
in
the
Florida.
Farm.
And they accept an offer of a sunset cruise from a nice guy they meet, who seems like a nice guy, who ends up murdering the three of them, throwing their bodies in the bay in Tampa, and has eluded capture. And we are trying to figure out, at this point, who did it. The authorities have a composite sketch and some information about him because of a very similar sexual assault case that had happened a few months earlier. And
a writing sample
from some directions he'd given these three women who were murdered. And they have now put the handwriting up on billboards all around Tampa. And now we're 3 years on from the murders. And tip number 1,500 and something has come in.
That is crazy.
From a neighbor saying, I recognize the composite. I recognize the boat. We have a contract for some work he did for us.
We recognize the handwriting.
It's Oba Chandler.
And this neighbor wasn't currently living next to this. He had moved on. Right?
Yes.
This was an old neighbor.
He had moved. But,
yes.
But she said it's a guy named Oba Chandler.
Obit.
Oba.
Oba. O-B-A. O-B-A. Oba Chandler.
Okay. Oba Chandler. And this is, we're certain it's him. So now the authorities have a name. Oba Chandler. they run Oba through the system, and it turns out that he is
a career criminal. Career criminal from the time, feels like the time he could walk, he was committing crimes.
Well, it's good that he was out and among the populace.
Well, yeah. The other thing that the neighbor said was suspicious, or the former neighbor, was that he had moved. He closed his business, his contracting business in 1990.
It was aluminum siding.
Aluminum siding, yeah, contracting.
I thought he was a career criminal.
Well, you can be both.
Oh, okay.
Have you ever met an aluminum siding guy? I mean, aren't there like movies about how they're basically just con artists?
I apologize to any of the aluminum siders who are listening.
Exactly. So he had closed his business abruptly in 1990. So about 6 or 7 months after these murders.
Like he had a storefront?
No, he had just a contracting business putting in aluminum siding.
Gotcha.
So he left behind most of his belongings in Tampa, abandoned his house even, didn't stop paying the mortgage.
Yeah, that went into foreclosure.
Yep. They went on the run, basically. He went on the run to California. Now, what's interesting is that Oba Chandler is a career criminal who then realizes that he could work for the DEA, yes, the Drug Enforcement Agency,
okay,
as an informant.
Oh.
So he goes to them and says, I would love to help you guys entrap people. Just pay me and I will be a snitch. So our murder suspect has taken on new work as an informant for the DEA.
But then they don't know he's the guy that they're looking
no.
for.
No idea. No. Right. Nobody gives them any idea. Like, this is from 1989 to 1992, the cops have zero idea of who it could be. So during that time, while he's on the run, he's also working for the DEA.
Right.
Doing wiretaps and informing on sometimes friends and family even. They said the concept, the DEA agents actually later said that the concept of loyalty was not one that this guy was familiar with at all. Like, no. he would happily turn in a friend.
Right. In fact, he had said something to his brother and his son-in-law, rather, making a comment that he had no family loyalty.
Right. Well, he's also completely morally bankrupt in every possible
that
way.
Is true.
I mean, right. if he's the guy, and it.
Oh yeah, no, he's
no, I'm saying, like, I don't know if we're hiding. Like, he is the we know he's the murderer.
We know, right?
But I'm saying, like,
they were like, "Wow, this guy'll turn."
I bet
anybody.
He was really good as a DEA snitch. They probably loved him.
He also, during this time, he's on the run with his wife Deborah.
He had a wife,
yes,
and his child, his 2-year-old girl Whitney.
Whitney, yeah, he had 8 children with 7 baby mamas.
Wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
8 kids with 7 baby
moms. Oh, okay. I thought you said it the opposite. I was like, 7 kids with 8 moms.
Well, here's a funny thing. So here, his credit is so bad, this guy.
Oh, God, yeah.
He's, in order to get, like, phone lines and utilities, he has to use Whitney, his 2-year-old daughter, he pretend that she's applying for stuff. So everything's in the little girl's name.
Oh, we these do guys that with are
the lease to their apartment in their daughter's name.
Right. In Whitney's name.
So grimy.
And the other issue with this guy is, despite the DEA work that he's doing and all of this, you know, being on the run, it's very hard to settle down and have a business. In order to make money, what does he do?
Sunset cruises?
Robberies,
right.
Left and right, robbing jewelry stores. You know, like, the guy's just robbing stuff left and right. And so now you got this guy who's murdered these 3 women. He's sexually assaulted at least this other Canadian woman on the cruise.
Yes,
on the run with his wife and 2-year-old daughter, robbing jewelry stores while also working as an informant for the DEA.
And when's the movie on this coming out? Jeez.
It's like insane, right?
And does he still have his death boat?
No, no. He actually sold that.
Sold it?
Yes, yes. He did sell it.
He sold everything he could to have money to go on the run.
Right, and his wife has no idea.
You know, that's a good question.
Because Kim knows when I take a cookie.
So the wife, it's interesting. It's an interesting question. So the wife, it's not that she has no idea. In the fall of 89, Deborah Chandler, Oba's wife, a few months after these murders, says that he's on a short fuse. So he's not sleeping. He's getting upset. He wouldn't sleep in the same bed with her anymore, and they stopped having sex. At one point, Deborah said, "I've had enough of this behavior. I'm taking Whitney, and I'm leaving you." And he said, "No, you're not." And he pushed her and bruised her, at which point she's starting to realize something's real. Like, what she's seeing of all of that, her side mm-hmm. of this. So she knows that something's going on. She doesn't know what.
Right.
He hasn't said anything about it.
I think he's going through murder withdrawal.
So here's the interesting thing. Because eventually the police had a composite sketch of the rapist from the Canadian woman. Right. They actually, separately, unrelated to the murders, they were running this composite sketch looking for this rapist.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on all the TV programs, the Tampa Tribune, the St. Petersburg Times. When they start running these composite photos, Oba disappears. Like, Deborah's like, Oba just disappeared. No idea where he was. She said, as soon as she saw those composite sketches, she was like, "I'm not surprised he left because that guy looks just like Oba."
Right. But hang on one second. I'm just getting a little lost because you said they went on the run with his wife.
Before they went on the run.
So they're in
Florida. So in Florida, right after the murders in 1989, they're still in Florida. They're going on with life as before, except that Oba's acting really weird.
Right.
He's behaving erratically.
Right. But like I said, I joked and said murder withdrawal, but like he was going to kill those Canadian girls. He did kill the mom and the two kids. It feels like he's a sociopath that mm-hmm. needs to kill.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he was even able to stop doing that.
But here's the thing, though.
He didn't stop.
That was another thing that the FBI profiler noted, was that this was likely a serial killer.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like, and that's a lot of stuff. You've got serial killing. You've got assaults. You've got boat cruises, aluminum siding. That's a lot. And a wife and a kid. You know, this guy, but he's a sociopath. Okay, so wait. So the composite came out. They take off. The wife is with him or no?
He leaves on his own. So he leaves, and Deborah, Oba's wife, doesn't think it's because he did it. She thinks it's because the sketch looks just like him. And she's like, he's probably worried that people are going to think he did it.
Oh my God, that is the dumbest thought ever.
I mean, also because when he was out on the boats both times, when he was out on the boat after committing the rape and when he was out on the boat after the murders, he would call.
You mean call home?
Yeah.
Right. Hey, honey.
With excuses as to why he's out late.
And I see. Right.
At one point, the gas ran out. It's some just nonsense, right? Just makes up this stuff. So at this point, when he leaves town or just disappears, and his wife Deborah is, after like a week of this being gone, she's like, okay, now she's wondering, did he do these rapes? Did he kill these women?
Yes. You know what an innocent person does? If a composite sketch comes out and it looks just like you, you go to the police and you say, hey, that looks a lot like me. Here's my whereabouts. Here's how I didn't do it. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
When you go, I got scared. I went on the run. And then his wife's like, oh, yeah, it's because it looks like him. Crazy time.
Interestingly enough, this case was featured on Unsolved Mysteries.
Robert Stack?
Yep. When that happened, he took off.
And then that's when he began his DEA career?
Well, not right away. First, he goes to Ohio, not because the
wait,
women,
what?
Not because the women are from Ohio, but because his daughter happens to live in Cincinnati.
Right, which is where he...
His daughter. Oh, because he's got all these kids.
Right, because he's from Ohio, remember? So
that's right. Oh, that was real.
Yes.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, that's real.
So he
goes to Cincinnati, it turns out, and he's hanging out with his daughter, Crystal.
And her husband.
And her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And he, for some reason, has told Crystal and Rick that he killed these women.
Wait, what?
He tells them.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Deborah, back in Florida, has been calling Crystal saying, have you seen your father? Have you heard from your father? And Crystal's like, nope, no idea where he is. Covering for him, right?
Yeah.
So Crystal's covering for dad. So Oba's son Jeff and Jeff's wife go to visit Deborah in Florida to see how she's doing. While they're there, Crystal calls from Ohio and tells her mom, Dad's confessed to these murders.
Just shared like, horrific
just so
crimes.
You know, he's shared with us that he killed these people.
So weird.
And Deborah sort of just is like, I don't know what you're talking about. Just sort of puts on this thing of like, I'm just not going to take this information in. And then Crystal says to Deborah, go to a payphone and call me from the payphone. So she does. Deborah calls her daughter Crystal from this payphone, gives her the number of the payphone. Crystal then says, go to this other phone, to another payphone. These people are insane.
This is like a ransom thing.
It's
this
insane.
Is like a kidnapping.
Like they have this idea that they're trying to like, they all think the house is bugged.
Oh.
And so they're worried that all these phones.
Which house is bugged?
The Florida house.
I see.
Right. So they're thinking they're like somehow getting away from investigators, all these crazy phone things. Anyways.
So they're trying to help.
Crystal calls the second payphone and puts Dad on the phone.
Uh-huh.
Right. Oba gets on the phone with Deborah. And she says he sounded paranoid. He's got all these money problems, which he knew about. He says he wants out of the marriage. And he says, have you talked to the police about me? He keeps saying to her, have you said anything to the police about me? Have you said anything to the police? She says, no. I want you to come home to me and Whitney, to the baby. And she says, don't worry. You know, the house isn't bugged. No one's looking for you. And he comes home.
What?
Yeah.
He comes home.
He does go home.
Like right after Thanksgiving.
This is so weird.
1989. He comes back to the Florida house.
Oh, in 89.
Yeah, in 89.
Okay.
Right. Not long after.
All right. So this is like a parallel. Like we talked about the investigation part from the, you know, what happened with the victims.
Yes.
And now so this is
now
happening.
We're going back in time and, to what's happening with
story,
the Chandlers, right?
Right
and how, because okay. You asked the question, you know, how do you hide for 3 years?
Right.
Right. How do you?
In plain sight.
In plain sight. And the answer is, apparently, if you're in the right kind of family, you can talk about the fact that you did all this shit and nobody says anything.
That is
you know?
True.
Like right. Nobody, and you know, who knows? It's hard to, like, I don't want to, like, obviously, if your relative tells you they murdered people and they did, you should probably report them. You should tell the police. But it's hard to say without being in that situation and also being in a situation where the person you're talking about reporting is someone you know is kind of violent and crazy. I don't know what the psychology is. It's hard to say from the outside.
Right.
Because it's the same thing you could say about people who are in abusive relationships. You know, people are like, why don't you leave? And it's like, it's not that easy. There's a lot.
Yeah.
It's never that simple.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They say that it takes a person in a domestic violence situation to leave. And I don't know if this has changed, but at the time that I was doing this work, they said you'd leave 7 times before you'd actually make the break, which is a lot.
It's a lot.
Kim's up to 6.
Ba-dum-bum.
You gonna say something about Christians now? So Oba, and jump in if I'm leaving anything out here. I think I got
Look,
this.
Look, this is all new to me. I'm actually like...
Okay, so Oba comes home and they confront him. You know, Deborah says, did you do this?
Right.
These assaults.
And he's like, no.
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 Of course not.
What are you talking about?
You're believing our daughter named Crystal? No one believes a crystal.
And so life kind of just goes on.
Right.
In this house.
They
just go back to living and
laughing about that sketch that looks just like me.
Right. And what's interesting is people have called in and said, this sketch looks like this guy.
Yeah.
And the police just haven't, again, it's like, it's not, they didn't
I mean,
do
they're
anything
sifting
wrong.
Through,
just so many
yeah,
leads.
I mean, sifting through.
Right. The other thing was, the vehicle description was an Isuzu Trooper, is what the people said. The woman had said, the Canadians had said he drove, and he actually drove a Jeep Cherokee. So that little detail was
right
enough to say, oh, it's probably not him. And the height was a little off. They said he was 5'10", but was over 6 foot. So life goes on, and then we get to 1990, and Oba, at that point, I think he's feeling like things are closing in. Like, he just has a spidey sense that...
Right.
That
he's getting nervous.
Yeah, he's getting nervous. He just can't stay in the same spot.
Right.
So that's when he shuts his business down, abandons the house, abandons the mortgage, and goes on the run with Deborah...
With the family.
And Whitney.
Okay.
And this is when he starts doing robberies again, when he starts working for the DEA as a snitch. And this is his life for, like, the next year and a half.
And he's living in California, you said?
He was in California, but then
now
he started heading back to
Florida.
He comes back to Florida. As improbable as that seems,
right?
Yeah.
He's now back in the Tampa area.
But, you know, Florida. There's a lot of crazies in Florida, so he can kind of blend in.
And so he's...
does he pretend to go to work? All right, I'm heading out.
No, not only does he not pretend to go to work, he's actually got Deborah and the daughter involved in the robberies.
What?
Like, oh, yeah, yeah. No, he's got
wow. That I didn't know.
Yeah.
Wait a second.
Yeah, yeah. He has them, like, he has, like, Deborah wait in the car with the baby while he robs, like, a jewelry store. And
holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the one he did in Clearwater in 91, I think. He's not hiding it.
Would you do that, honey, for me?
No.
Would you wait in the car while I go rob something?
No.
No?
No, I you would be hospitalized in a psych ward somewhere.
Right.
And so, you know, they did a background. They did all kinds of checks on him. They had 18 juvenile arrests that he had back when he grew up in Ohio. Armed robbery. He even stole a dog. He's counterfeited.
Escaped
from prison once.
Like, kidnapping.
Kidnaps people. He also lied on his marriage license.
That one is unforgivable.
Mm-hmm. Deborah was not his first wife, as he indicated. It was his third wife.
Right.
And on September 7th, 1992, they check fingerprint evidence finally of his prints, and they get a positive match on his palm print to the brochure.
Right.
That was in Joan Rogers' car.
Right.
Okay.
The one that he'd written on.
Right.
A lot of circumstantial stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's...
He would lie his way into their dreams.
He was looking for James Bond girls.
How fun would that be to be a Bond girl?
Then twist them into a nightmare.
This guy's done this before. He'll do it again.
Until a group of women banded together to put him behind bars and keep him there.
You have to participate fiercely, fiercely in what happens next.
I'm Keith Morrison, and this is Murder in the Hollywood Hills, an all-new podcast from Dateline.
Listen to Murder in the Hollywood Hills for free each week or subscribe to Dateline Premium on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or datelinepremium.com to unlock new episodes 1 week early.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Women Who Travel is a transported podcast for anyone curious about the world. We talk to adventurers and athletes.
I've raced the God's Own Adventure Race, which is on the South Island and goes through the mountains down in the Southern Alps on New Zealand. That was 8 days spent out in the wilderness.
And chefs.
Iranian food is home, it's family, it's love.
And we share dispatches from our listeners.
Ireland is full of these, I will call them ghosts of the past.
From stampeding elephants to training sled dogs. We hear it all.
The dogs will curl right up with you, and it can be kind of cozy waiting things out.
New episodes of Women Who Travel publish every Thursday. Join us wherever you listen.
He's very crafty.
I would think you would have to be if you're going to...
I mean, even if you just think about, like, the craftiness involved and, like...
Right.
Like, that's a lot.
Getting your family involved. And you thought the Sopranos were fucked up.
I mean, and at this point, he's being heavily surveilled by investigators.
Yeah, they're all over him at this
point. Well, after the fingerprint match or the palm print or whatever. Or no, before that.
Before that.
Because of the sketch.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
No, okay. At that point, they knew his name. Once the neighbor people had said, oh, that's his face,
yeah,
that's his handwriting, that's his car.
They took it serious.
Yeah. Then they're like, this is the guy, especially once they ran the background on him and like, oh, this guy's a career criminal.
Right.
He's disappeared, you know.
And then they had, investigators had gone to Toronto and mm-hmm. interviewed the two women, showed them.
Mm-hmm. The Canadian woman that right. he'd raped one of them.
Right. Okay, and they recognized mm-hmm. him.
Yes, okay. They both recognized
him. All right, so we
him.
Got
immediately.
We got
no, they look at his photos, and they're like, that's the guy.
Gotcha. So,
and so they decide on, the cops decide they're going to arrest him on either September 17th or 18th, 1992.
17th or 18th?
Mm-hmm, in Florida.
Okay.
And on the 17th, while under surveillance, he suddenly leaves the state.
That's right, yeah.
And he drives to Cincinnati. But now he's in another state.
Right. And they're like, oh my God, we lost him.
Good Lord. This is a real testimony to the legal system. But also, if you're crafty enough, I guess you can get in and out. Like, if you don't give a shit, if you are just, yeah, I mean, this guy's like a drifter almost.
He's like a drifter with a purpose.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm just going to stay out of the
I'm law. Just curious why he killed these people.
Well, because he wanted to, because he knew he could get away. I mean, and the thing is, too, it's like his previous crimes, it almost,
yeah, but
I mean, consider, too, that this is what he got caught for. He could have killed before.
That's true.
And apparently he was arrested for peeping through a woman's window while masturbating. So he was arrested for that fun.
What's the crime?
Oh, my.
You're fucking disgusting.
Oh, wow.
Oh, sorry, I was... I think I missed something there.
You touched a...
All right, listen. So he flees the state. He goes to Cincinnati. He stays mm-hmm. there for a little while.
Yeah. And while he's in Cincinnati, he sells some jewelry that he stole. I mean,
right.
Does some business. And then he goes back to Florida. Immediately upon returning on September 24th. Is that right?
24th? Yes.
September 24th, 1992.
Yes.
At a gas station near his home on Interstate 75, he is arrested and he offers no resistance.
Right. He's taken into custody.
Why did he go back?
And jailed at Pinellas County Jail mm-hmm. and charged with sexual battery.
They sexual charged, battery.
They charged
sexual
him
battery.
For the rapes
yeah.
because they needed more evidence.
Oh, for the murder.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. But they had these women that could testify.
Right.
And,
right. And,
okay.
and they were able to hold him while they
gathered
more evidence.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And they had him at $1 million bond, right? Which is insanely high for sexual battery. And so he knew, he had to know
right.
that they know about the murders because $1 million for sexual battery.
The walls right. were closing in.
And Hal wasn't going to post his bond, his bail?
No.
Good.
In fact, it's funny because, well, never mind. We don't need to reopen
go
that
down
can
that
of
route.
Worms.
Why? What were we going to say?
Well, John, Hal's brother, John,
oh, God.
was a prime suspect
yeah, of
for
course.
A while
yeah.
because
right,
of
right.
all these issues. But they had to really prove where he was
right.
at the time.
And but, they concluded that he could have had nothing to do with it and that he couldn't have, even within the confines of jail, contracted it out. Or there was nothing to
oh, because he was in jail
support that.
At that point
correct.
For the, right,
yeah,
for the yes. abuse of the ex-girlfriend. Wow, there is so much to this,
yeah.
but we're not quite done, right?
I mean, it's so much.
They caught him.
They caught him. He's in jail now. They're looking now for more evidence.
Oh, so this is this still ongoing?
Yes. I mean, so they caught him. He's in jail for the rape of the Canadian tourist, and they are now trying to continue to gather more evidence.
This is early 90s.
To,
mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay. 92.
Okay, so then what happens?
They end up speaking with Crystal and Rick, his daughter
yep.
and his son-in-law. And they confirm that he did indeed make a trip to Cincinnati, Ohio, and that he did indeed essentially confess.
Does that make them accessories?
It doesn't make...
No.
It,
no, okay.
No, no, but
it... No, if they were there, you're an accessory.
Right, right, but I'm saying if somebody confesses a murder and you don't report it...
Well, you know...
I thought that that was...
I mean, I don't know how the law works. I don't know.
You don't know. That,
yeah.
Yeah, I...
You just have...
I mean, because people can tell you anything.
That is true.
I mean...
That is true. And you don't want to immediately call up and say, hey, guess what? My dad just confessed to murders.
Right.
But he's been drinking.
Right.
Why is that funny, Kim?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So then he actually gets booked for another robbery in September. And then in November of 1992, he is finally indicted on the three counts of first-degree murder in the deaths of Joan, Michelle, and Christy Rogers.
Right. Right. Once they got that information from his daughter and his son-in-law, they were able to convene a grand jury,
right,
and formally charge him.
Right. Okay, and did they get put to death or?
Well, they had to have a trial.
It is Florida, right? They kill people there.
So the trial begins on September 1994. And the prosecution's case is he lured those three women to the boat,
yep,
tied and bound them to concrete rocks, that he sexually assaulted each of them and threw them in the water where they asphyxiated.
So they were alive when they went in the water?
Yes.
Holy fuck.
Handwriting experts and fingerprint analysts, marine phone operators, Chandler's daughter, her husband, all testified on behalf of the prosecution.
Right.
The Canadian tourists also testified.
Mm-hmm.
The defense, well, he admits that he met the women, gave them directions, but didn't see them again after that.
Right.
And he emphatically denies responsibility for these murders.
Mm-hmm.
His story, there was interesting because at trial, you know, he had always told his wife, Deborah, why he was late. So, you know, he was out murdering these women, but he said, oh, my gas ran out and I had to duct tape it. And I tried to call the Coast Guard, and then I flagged down this Coast Guard ship. So he has this whole story that he tells about what happened. And Deborah even confirmed that this is the story that he told.
So they try to check out.
And they check all that out, and they're like, there was no ship you could have flagged down anywhere near there.
Right.
There's
right.
No calls that came into any of these places. And then they have a mechanic who says...
But lying to your wife isn't a crime. You know, you could have said, all right, fine, I was at the strip club.
These are the kind of details I love.
Right.
Is that a mechanic said the story about the gas leaking,
yes,
doesn't work because he claims that he was duct taping the gas line because it was leaking into the boat.
Right. Right.
And the guy said, the boat mechanic was like, look, the kind of engine and gas line on this boat, if it has a leak, would be spraying upwards, not down.
Mm.
Like, it's these very like interesting little details that people get tripped up on. There was just a preponderance of evidence.
Was that to try to mask why he had duct tape?
It could very well be. I mean,
who knows?
Interestingly enough, he testified in his own defense, which is
always a good idea.
Always, always. And on that very point, he became very flustered and angry.
Right. Well, it's always good for the court to see you flustered and angry.
And freaking out.
Yeah.
Especially when you can't explain your lies.
Right. Man, here's the worst part. You got this sad, tragic story of this family that encounters an awful, awful person back home who does horrible things to them.
Right.
And then they leave and they meet a worse person.
Yeah.
That is just fucked up.
Yep.
And there are fucked up people everywhere. Like you said earlier, or I think in the first episode, it's like people are gross and disgusting.
It's just mind-boggling.
Yeah.
So on September 29th, 1994, Ober Chandler was found guilty
in the murders
of three counts of murder. On November 4th, 1994, Ober Chandler was sentenced to death. Now, I don't know how you guys feel about the death penalty. I am actually not a fan of the death penalty.
except for Oba Chandler.
Exactly right. I mean, you consider, well, you consider that this is what the death penalty, it's for that guy.
Right.
The interesting thing, Morris, was that the jurors were so freaked out by this guy. He frightened them. In fact, they reported having nightmares. There was a couple of women on the jury that this case prompted them to keep a pistol.
Oh, wow.
When Chandler was sentenced to death, it was by way of electric chair. But by 2000, the mode of execution was now lethal injection.
Right. They should have just taken him into the bay and tied a block to him and thrown him in the water.
That would have been too kind for that guy.
Yeah, well.
So Oba Chandler, his last meal would be two salami sandwiches on white bread with mustard and a cup of coffee. And he would make no final statement, but he would leave a written hand note that lied and said, "You are killing an innocent man today."
And he wrote it with his other hand so it wouldn't match the handwriting.
No, it actually did.
Of course it did.
He was executed at 408 at Florida State Prison on November 15th, 2011. He spent 17 years on death row.
Oh, wow.
It's crazy to think that this piece of shit was living off of Floridians want to be mad about the way tax dollars are being spent. But 17 years he was on death row.
And two salami sandwiches he needed?
Yeah.
He needed two.
He needed two.
It's like, dude.
Yeah.
What a piece of shit.
And the judge to the case, Judge Susan Schaefer, she had presided over the capital case, and she was quoted as saying, "He did not have a soul, I don't think. Or if he did, it was a black one," which is kind of scary. Another footnote that I just wanted to add, there's a couple of things. I just wanted to...
You can't let this one go, can you?
No, I can't, because it's a lot of...
It's a lot.
It is.
I'm going to get a pistol. I think we should get a pistol, honey.
I think I agree with you.
Holy moly.
DNA would link Oba Chandler to the unsolved murder.
Oh.
Yeah.
Of?
Of Ivalisi Barrios Burgess on February 25th, 2014.
Wait, that 2014 is when they
confirmed
it. Yes. But when did that murder happen?
That murder had happened in 1990, I believe.
Oh, so during all this on the run shit,
yeah,
he's killing other people.
And he's been executed by the time they figure out that he did it.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And where was she killed?
She was found sexually assaulted, bound, gagged, and her body under a mailbox in a residential neighborhood.
So not a boat one, Florida. This is not like on land. This is
no, in fact, she was working at a store. Her tires were slashed.
Uh-huh.
And then a friendly stranger appears.
This guy's so Ted Bundy-ish. It's almost like he learned from Ted Bundy, like the tricks of being the helpful person who then...
Well, that's why I'm like, I don't need any help. No, thank you. I'm good.
Well, right. it's just infuriating, you know, the whole fucking thing
and
is
so
horrible.
Exploited.
And then, like, the Florida taxpayers spend millions of dollars keeping this guy alive for 17 years.
17 years.
And then the thing that always kills me is when, you know, it's just like a thing we hear and we just sort of accept it now, but it's like we're thinking about, like, they get to pick their last meal.
Yeah, fuck him.
Fuck
and
that.
You're fucking
like, why do they get to pick their last meal? Like,
they should let them pick it and then give them the opposite.
I mean, it's crazy. Like,
I'm curious.
Like,
I need to. What would be the opposite of two salami sandwiches?
Oh yeah, what is the opposite of two salami sandwiches?
Here's your ham, sir.
Like nobody offered these. He didn't offer these women. Like
no,
not like the horror of the last moments of their lives, and he gets to pick his last meal. Like it makes no sense.
It's it was interesting because taunting.
It's like here's all the good food you wouldn't have.
But salami sandwich? I mean,
well, he gets to pick. That's his favorite thing.
Hey, this is Kim. You know me. I love a good true crime podcast. Well, I'm not the only one who's excited for The Burden, a new true crime series from Orbit Media, the folks who brought you the number one hit, Empire on Blood. Anyway, The Burden tells the story of Detective Louis Sclarella, once celebrated for solving the toughest cases in New York City in the 90s. But things took a turn when a group of convicted murderers, all claiming to be innocent, became jailhouse lawyers and began investigating the investigator. Turns out they uncovered all kinds of issues with Detective Sclarella's involvement in dozens of cases, which led to the release of over 20 people he helped convict. Not only that, but the government had to pay out a record-breaking $150 million in wrongful conviction settlements, with more to come. The question is, can these potentially wrongly convicted murderers get themselves released too? You'll have to listen to find out. The Burden, which includes first-time interviews with Detective Sclarella himself, is out now with new episodes every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You might be surprised to know that not all serial killers are straight, cisgender white men. And the victims of true crime are not a monolith either. She's Wendy and I'm Beth. And together we host Fruit Loop's Serial Killers of Color, a true crime podcast.
Together we take deep dives into the true crime stories about marginalized and minoritized perps and victims that often go untold.
We also provide the context and nuance that these stories deserve. At Fruit Loops, we're serving up true crime with a side of history, society, culture, and some fun.
Listen to Fruit Loop Serial Killers of Color on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know,
they should all take turns spitting in it and then fucking give it to him. It's all disgusting. Okay, yeah. So wait. I was going to say, like, this guy has all the hallmarks of a serial killer. I can't, like, the only reason to keep him alive.
That's what the profile is.
Yeah, the only reason to keep him alive is how many other things can we link him to, you know?
Well, they have his DNA, and they was able to link him to that murder after he was executed.
Right. Any others?
As far as I know, no, but.
Yeah,
there's but a lot also of assumption. Remember, DNA collection in the 80s and 90s is not.
No, it's new.
What it is.
Yeah. So, Jerry, Kim.
The takeaway is
What would the takeaway be?
This one's interesting because you feel like the takeaway from this one is pretty. I mean, to me, it's like.
Stranger danger is real.
Right. And that if you're a woman traveling alone, you should be extra careful. And that is true. But. Just to sort of pull some stats in, because this is a real anomaly. This is not, you know, this is one of those stories that you hear, and the way our brains work is we like to take the worst case scenario and make that the likely scenario and then prepare for that.
Right.
But the reality is, as I was digging into this, 32 million women in America travel alone, meaning, you know, a long trip or a weekend trip every year.
Who counted?
The American Woman Traveling Alone Association, the AWTAA. OUTA. I don't know.
Did you just make that up?
Yeah, I don't know.
I was taking those stats in, and then I was like, oh, okay.
No, but these are the real stats. They did figure out. I don't know how they figured out, but something like 30 million women travel alone every year, and less than 1,000 of them are murdered. It's a very small percentage. And most of those killings are people they are acquainted with.
I was going to say, people who know.
Right. And to your point, that is an anomaly. And that's why it's harder for investigators to find
strangers.
Right.
Less infrequent, but still fairly rare, is sexual assault of women, like while they're traveling. That does happen more often. But again, most of that is acquaintance or like people that
uncle
that are known to them. However, all that said, these are good tips whether you're a man, woman, traveling alone, traveling with someone. Just incorporate some safety into your routine. And these are all things that these women could not have done because these technologies did not exist, right? When these women
encountered
this situation in 1989, there were just three women in a car. There's no phones. There's no GPS tracking.
Right. There's no. Oh,
there's nothing.
There's no. Oh, let me check the location. Okay. I mean,
right.
There was none of that.
So these are just simple things you can do. You can text your location frequently to friends, you know, a couple times a day. Let them know where you're at. Call home. If you're backpacking, you know, just be mindful of trying to stay in hostels that are registered where there's other people. If you really want to take it to another level, you can actually carry a GPS tracker that
you could
tell someone, you know, and I know a lot of parents do this with younger kids where they're like, they have apps on the phone that can tell them exactly where they are. You can do that proactively. You could say,
yeah,
hey, just check in on me, you know, a couple of times a day. Here's my, you know, the tracker app.
Mm-hmm.
So these are things you can do.
Can put the black box on our daughter. Yeah.
No. So
it's like a flight log.
Yes, no.
But these are all things you can do. But the truth is, it's pretty safe to travel. You know,
It's gotten a lot safer,
it's
obviously.
Safer.
Like this was definitely a product of the time where you could.
This was just so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a really monster, right? Yeah. And the good news is that these things don't happen that often. It's horrible that they happen at all. But true monsters among us, I know.
It is interesting though, like you say, like, oh, they meet a helpful stranger who gives them directions. But no, that's not enough. He has to invite them to come that night on a midnight cruise or a sunset cruise. And it's just like, you know, like I said, if Kim was away with our daughter and
oh my God,
and called me up and said, hey, yeah, we're going to go on the sunset cruise with the guy we met at the gas station.
He would go crazy.
I mean, Kim would never do that.
Well, that's right? True.
Kim, having grown up in New York City, you're automatically like, no, fuck.
Well,
fucking,
yeah.
No,
I mean, my default setting is no.
Right. But these women are from the
exactly.
From
that
the
was
country,
that was
so.
my
yeah,
whole point.
But still,
you know, it was interesting because one of the things that I was thinking about, and I'm not suggesting that it could have even been, but I was like, did he pull a gun? It was three of them. Could they have like kicked him in his face? And I mean,
you don't know how it went down.
Look,
though. He could have isolated each of them.
I just find myself like,
hold on, let me explain how he did it. You know, so I don't mean to do that.
I'm curious. I think that there is a point where you're just in complete shock. But at that moment, that very moment when you realize, oh, he's going to kill us.
How come there's cinder blocks on the boat?
I kept wondering, like, what was going through their minds? What were they thinking? What was Joe thinking? And the thing that I kept coming across was just the punishment of having to watch like the person before.
Right.
It was three of them. So, you know,
stop. You're making it worse.
I know.
But I get it.
It's pretty brutal. It was.
Yeah.
You know, a few years ago, I read this book called The Gift of Fear by Gavin DeBecker. It was fascinating. And basically, it was just sort of a way to keep yourself safe and protected. And a lot of it centered on really trying to tune in to people, your environment.
Right, that fear is actually a gift.
Exactly,
to help keep
exactly.
You
that
alive.
Like a lot of times we are so socially conditioned to be polite that when somebody's like, hey, you got a lot going on there. Let me take this bag and help you to your apartment.
Right.
You're like, oh no, I'm good. I do not need your help. But people, and this is what he addresses in the book, because people are conditioned to be polite, you sort of push those feelings aside. And he's like, I submit to you that you should not be doing that. And, you know, I had said to our daughter, you should read this book.
Why did you point to Jerry when you said that?
I didn't point to Jerry.
I'm kidding.
Because she's all of our daughter. I had tried to encourage Gia to read the book because I felt like this is so important that she could really benefit. She's like, I got enough work to do.
Well, don't tell everybody that she hasn't read it.
Well,
that is a particular issue for women and girls too, right?
It's a great polite thing.
Like
he stressed that point too, that women are conditioned to be polite, to be, you know, oh, you know, thank you. I will accept your chivalrous offer to Carrie, like whatever it is. And
well, it's all based on the charisma of the person, because there have been plenty of women who had no problem turning down my offer for help. I'm just saying.
What kind of help are you offering?
I didn't tell you about the boat, honey.
Oh, God.
Too soon.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. It's such a fine line between, like, you don't want to blame the victim, right? It's not their fault that this guy was a monster. But it's like, is it better to be rude and alive or follow your intuition, be conditioned a little bit?
Well, that's the thing, too, you know, to your point. I don't know that they, until the tide turned, I don't think that they felt they had any reason.
And this guy probably made it seem like there was absolutely no reason. He's a fellow Ohioan.
Yeah.
I'll say this, is that I don't think they did anything wrong, but I do think it's a good idea if you're traveling, and whether you do it as a phone call or a text, if your plans deviate and you're going to do something like either an adventure that wasn't on the itinerary, or you met up with someone who's a new person, a stranger, who's off the menu, and you're going to do something with them.
Let someone know.
Let someone know. Yeah. That's it. Just tell someone, you know, hey, we met this guy. He's going to take us on a cruise, or he's going to take us mountain climbing, or whatever it is. And tell someone that you trust and love. And if they say, hey, you know what? Maybe don't go do that. Think about not doing it. But at least you've told somebody. I think these women were swept up in the moment. They were excited. They didn't have cell phones. They did make some calls from the hotel room. For whatever reason, they didn't call anyone and say about they were going on this boat. Not that that would have, the sad thing is that wouldn't have saved their lives necessarily if they'd gone. But someone at least would have known.
Yeah.
Maybe they could have found this guy faster.
Right. I was going to say, this is an odd case too. Like, I hate to do this, but looking at it from the point of view of the killer, like this
was. He didn't do it. No, I'm just.
This is like a perfect crime, potentially. It's just, like, I hate in a movie when a bad guy is playing everything perfectly and then slips up and says the thing that they shouldn't say, or does something really stupid that is against everything that that character has done the whole movie. In this case, like, this guy does this thing, he's gotten away with it, but then he oddly admits it, and then he goes back to Florida over and over, where he's bound to get caught. Like, really weird combination of, like, very smart, like, genius-level bad guy, and then really dumb. But I guess that's the sociopathic part of it. Like, they don't think the way normal people think, or something. You know, I mean, it's a bizarre mix of smart and dumb. But, like, yeah, it's motiveless, right? I mean, I said it before, like, robberies, kidnapping, like, there's a monetary, you're trying to get something, gain something mm-hmm. from it. There's nothing to gain from this except a life on the run and nonstop, you know, looking over your shoulder in a sense. Like, why the fuck did he do this? You know, even if he robbed the three of them, and yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean,
that's the answer. He's a sick
piece of shit. Piece of shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, Kimmy, do you have any other takeaway?
Try to be a step ahead. Like, I don't know. My mind always goes to them on the boat and realizing that some fucked up shit was about to go down. And, you know, I'm like, oh my God, like, is that life now where you're like, I'm going out on a date, but let me see, what am I going to do if some fucked up shit goes down? I mean, it's kind of a shame. It's like, well, I'm going to poke him in the eye or grab them by the testicles and, like, just have those. When I was a kid growing up, that's what my father would say to me, literally. He would literally just be constantly talking to me about the potential of being in a fucked up situation and what I needed to do to get out of it.
Right.
And how's that going?
I was going to say, it took about 3 dates before she grabbed my testicles.
Like, poke him in the eye and grab the testicles. That is like how you say hello to Adam when he comes home from work, right?
Hello, this is Dr. Grande, the host of True Crime Psychology and Personality. On my podcast, I explore and explain the pathology behind some of the most horrendous crimes and those who commit them. We discuss topics like narcissism, psychopathy, sociopathy, and antisocial personality disorder from a scientifically informed perspective. What is a narcissist? How do you spot a sociopath? What signs can you look for to protect yourself from these dangerous personalities? It's not just about the stories, but also the science and psychology behind them. So if you're interested in true crime or mental health, I'd encourage you to give my show a listen wherever you get podcasts.
Hi, I'm Matt Harris. Seton Tucker and I host the podcast Impact of Influence, which for 2 years covered in depth Alec Murdoch, who was eventually convicted in 2023 of murdering his wife Maggie and son Paul. That story continues to evolve, and we will cover that. Plus, we will tell you stories of other true crime events that have happened in the South. Please join us on Impact of Influence. And give us a follow on the Impact of Influence Facebook page.
You know, I was just also thinking, like, poor Hal, going through all that shit with your brother and your family and then losing everybody. Like, holy fuck.
Well, I will say he suffered immensely, and I'm sure it comes as no shock that he sunk into a very deep depression and was just in an absolute state of despair for years. But he would eventually come out of it, and he would meet somebody and remarry.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In May of 1999.
Oh, wow.
So about 10 years later. And,
okay.
You know, I just hope that he's happy and and he keeps mementos of his family. He has pictures of his family and toys of his girls as mementos.
Whew, brutal world out there. All right. Well, that's another episode of Slaycation.
yeah.
All right.
That was pretty awful.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. And don't forget to leave a review.
I know.
It feels weird.
Right. No, these are truly roller coasters of emotions. And I think you started this one by saying how mad you guys were at this. And now I'm mad. Everybody's mad. But don't be mad when you leave a review. Don't be mad when you press 5 stars. And you could reach out to us on our website, right?
Yeah, slaycation.wtf.
Yeah.
How apropos.
WTF. We own the WTF.
We own what the fuck.
Yeah.
That's what we keep saying on this show.
And make sure you subscribe, and we love you. Stay safe.
Yeah.
Yes.
And thank you for listening, guys. We appreciate it.
Totally. Thank you.